Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Jeremy Lambert of Basketball Index and FanSided. What's up, fellas?
What's going on?
Jeremy, welcome to the show. We're going to talk about my second favorite team, I think, going into this season.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Second favorite team, OKC Thunder. And before we get started, as always, check us out on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But before we look forward to next year, we're going to look back at last year. Obviously, OKC was 48-34, first-round knockout by the Jazz in six games. You know, Andre Roberson being out, only played 39 games. Melo really didn't gel well. What were your thoughts on last year, Jeremy?
It was weird and long. The season just felt like forever. You know, they made the big moves, got Paul George, got Carmelo Anthony, and it translated to, like, one extra regular season win and one extra postseason win. Melo never fit, and I'm sure we'll get into him a little bit later on, but he never really fit. It just didn't gel. They tried to make big moves, and unfortunately sometimes when you do that, the personnel just always doesn't fit with the vision of the team and the roster, and that's pretty much what happened last year. So it made for a long season, a frustrating season, and just kind of weird with how the pieces never really fit with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's spot on. It was weird. I mean, by the numbers, you know, they were 7th in offensive rating, 9th in defensive rating. You know, this was still an above-average team, but they just never looked comfortable on the floor. Paul George was really inconsistent offensively last year. Obviously, Westbrook couldn't hit a three to save his life, but continued to shoot them. And then Melo just didn't look – I don't know. It was Melo still not accepting the fact that his body is no longer where his mind is. And I think Steven Adams was a good bright spot. Of course, Roberson being hurt, I mean, that just derailed this team further. And the bench unit was pretty weak.
Yeah, Roberson's injury, there was an 8-game stretch right before he got hurt. Westbrook wasn't taking the three. He was taking literally like one three per game. It was amazing to watch him just pass up wide open threes. But Roberson was doing a lot of the dirty work offensively that he doesn't get enough credit for. Melo was actually shooting lights out. Paul George was in a rhythm offensively. And, like, they were just bodying teams. And then Roberson did his baseline cut for the alley-oop. His leg gave out. And that was kind of – that really put a damper on the entire season because they could never replace him defensively. And they could never really replace him offensively either because, again, he does a lot of that work that doesn't show up in the box score, but that made life a lot easier for guys like George, Westbrook, and Anthony. So his injury kind of took its toll on the team on both ends of the floor, and they could never replace him. And it really showed up in the Jazz series where Utah was actively hunting guys like Melo and Brewer.
Yeah, and scary. That was a scary injury. That one was really uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, I thought when he landed, I thought, like, he just didn't get enough lift and he landed weird, or he slipped, actually. I thought he just, like, slipped. But then you watch it enough times, you see, like, his leg just gives out and then he has to be stretchered out. And I couldn't actually watch the team for the next week because I was like, yeah, it's just not worth it right now. Like, I'm too sad over this.
Do you think that was the biggest reason they lost the Jazz series? If he was healthy, they probably would have won, or were there a lot more issues than just that?
If he was healthy, it would have been more competitive. I think they still could have beaten the Jazz, but there was a clear ego clash with Carmelo Anthony and Billy Donovan. You know, Melo, he's a veteran. He wants to play. It's playoff basketball. Of course, a guy like that wants to play. And so Donovan kind of had to play him. He didn't have much of a choice, really, unless you're going to alienate a guy like that and potentially alienate the rest of the team. And he just couldn't play that series. He wasn't giving you anything defensively, and he wasn't making up for it with his offense. So we saw game five, that big comeback where it was Abrines, Grant, Adams, George and Westbrook. Like, that was the five that led that big comeback in the second half. And then that unit was really good in game six as well. But when Melo was in, he would play for 15 minutes and then get outscored by 30 points. So if Melo didn't play as much that series, they still possibly could have won it. If Roberson was there, Melo would have been more acceptable to play because Robertson makes up for a lot of the defensive deficiencies, that Melo has.
Corey, what were your thoughts on that?
I think – I'm not sure if it changes the series. I'm not sure if they win the series, but I think it makes life for Donovan Mitchell a whole lot harder that series.
True.
If he's going between Roberson and Paul George on the offensive end. I think they would have given him a lot of trouble, and I think that would have been probably one of the reasons the Thunder possibly could have won the series. But I don't know how the Jazz were still really scrappy that series. Ricky Rubio obviously played well in Inglis, but I think that would have been the biggest impact.
Moving on from there, what would be the highlight of last season for OKC?
I mean, that 8-game stretch was really fun. I would say more than that, though, Thanksgiving and Christmas. The day before Thanksgiving was the big win over the Warriors. And OKC didn't look good in that first month of the season. There was some bad losses to teams they should have beaten, and it didn't look like it was gelling. But then they come out and they smoke the Warriors, and it's like, all right, this is this team's potential right here. We've seen what this team can do now. And then Christmas was the win over Houston, and Houston didn't have Chris Paul, so that was maybe not as big a win as it could have been, but it's still a big win over a good team. So at least the holidays, those two holidays were good. And then the playoff comeback, I mean, it was the last one of the season, but that was just a hell of a comeback by just watching George and Westbrook go off in the way that they did. It again showed the glimpses of kind of what this team might be coming into this season.
Do you think that game was big in getting Paul George to come back?
I think he'd made up his mind. If you listen to a lot of the talk around the Thunder in the offseason, it sounds like by the trade deadline, Sam Presti and company kind of knew he was leaning towards coming back. I mean, maybe they didn't have a definitive answer, and who knows how much the rest of the team kind of knew, but it sounds like around the trade deadline, George had kind of made up his mind. I think it had to be earlier than that playoff game because they're eliminated from the playoffs, and then, you know, a month later, it's free agency almost, and George, he was signing at midnight. Like, he didn't even take a meeting with any other team, so I feel like he kind of knew even before the playoffs.
Gotcha. Corey, what about highlight for you?
January 20th, the game versus the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Thunder scored like 148 points. That was one of the few. Yeah. And like, it was one of those games where like, you saw like what this team could have been. Obviously Roberson was healthy, and you know, everyone's stat line is just like a video game. And they were just lights out from the field that game. They shot 58% as a team. And that game sticks out because it's just everyone was at their best at that point in time.
Yeah. For me, it's going to be Steven Adams. I think he just constantly improves, becoming this elite rebounder. And then obviously the combination of him and Westbrook in the pick and roll, just kind of almost giving Westbrook a safety valve to drop the ball off to and lay it in. But on a negative note, biggest disappointment of last season?
I think just Carmelo Anthony overall. Like, when the trade happened, I was excited for it because – everyone thought it was just going to be Olympic Melo. This guy's just going to have wide open opportunities from three. And, you know, you're given an elite shooter wide open shots from three. You think he's going to shoot well. And it never worked. He still wanted his touches in the post. The Thunder offense lost itself. The identity they've carved out really over the last 10 years. And I'm sure we'll talk about it when we get into the preview of this season, but they kind of lost that identity with Melo because he is sort of a ball stopper. And to his credit, like, he would move the ball when needed in the offense, but he would still want his touches in the post and get to work. And he didn't have the same lift that he'd shown in previous years. He was getting blocked by the rim and he just didn't shoot well. And it just never worked. And, you know, from what the expectations were when they signed him or when they traded for him to what it ended up being, it was just a huge flop and disappointment.
Yeah, for me, the disappointment, it's a toss-up between the Roberson injury, of course, because that changes the entire complexion of the season, and then Patrick Patterson. I was really disappointed with how poorly he played. You know, he only played like a 15 and a half minutes per game. I was just expecting him to be that perfect kind of stretch four for this team. and he just couldn't hit anything. I remember watching some games where he just couldn't even make a layup. For me, he was a big disappointment.
Yeah, you guys pretty much covered it. Melo obviously didn't fit right. Roberson's injury. And then also, I agree with you, Corey, Patrick Patterson. I believe last year we did the preview, we were kind of excited for
him. He was really high for him.
Yeah, and just a fit. And he just seemed like a perfect fit. And then he came back from the injury, didn't look right, didn't look 100% comfortable. Maybe after a full offseason, he'll do a little bit better this year. But I think that would have been a really nice piece to have, having that stretch four, even playing with the five sometimes and whatnot. But moving on to this year, in the OTG power rankings created by our writers, OKC is coming at number 7. You think this is fair, too high, too low? What are your thoughts?
That's fair. So I would say you've got like Golden State, Houston, Boston, probably even Toronto, given that they're out east, Philadelphia. And who else is ranked?
Utah. Utah's one spot above.
Yeah, so I would say that's fair. Maybe even a spot too low, because I'm higher on the Thunder this year than I am on the Jazz. But overall, fair.
Yeah, I think it's fair as well. I think you could possibly flip-flop them in the Jazz. Maybe even the Sixers, depending on how you see the Sixers.
Yeah.
Obviously, them being out east. But I think the top four teams are kind of locked in.
Yeah, right. I think this is a good spot for them here. You know, they could go up a spot, down a spot. I think right around here to start the season's good, and we'll see how everybody kind of fits in. And moving on from there, though, additions this year, you know, not a ton. They drafted Diallo, 45th overall, super athletic, you know, needs work, probably is more of a project-type player. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, all their draft picks, I don't know if we're going through them one by one, but all their draft picks are pretty much going to be G League guys this year. Diallo has the most upside and might get some playing time, kind of similar to the playing time Terrence Ferguson received last year. But this is a pretty top-heavy team that has a rotation in place. And Diallo, maybe he can turn into a 3-and-D guy with some extra athleticism akin to Jeremy Grant, but I don't foresee a lot of their draft picks getting a ton of meaningful playing time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't see any of these guys getting a lot of minutes.
Yeah, the same thing. You know, I think a lot of G League, and kind of like what you said, Jeremy, the rotation's already set, so most of the guys they're going to pick up are going to be guys they're going to work on and try to develop further down the line. But talking the big news, it's a trade. Obviously picked up Dennis Schroeder, Timothy Kabarot, and Abdul Nader. So all these guys, we'll start with Dennis Schroeder. What are your thoughts on what he can bring to the squad?
So Schroeder is kind of the enigma of the team now, depending on who you're asking, I guess, online and stuff. Some people think he's going to be, you know, the perfect fit. Others are watched his last season in Atlanta and just think, why would you take a chance on this guy? I'm more of the former. I think he's going to be a very good fit. I watched enough of him in Atlanta to know that it wasn't good, but I also know that team around him wasn't good either. Like, he's going to be playing with Paul George, Steven Adams, and at times Russell Westbrook. Those are infinitely better players than they had in Atlanta last season. And I really like Taurean Prince and John Collins, but I mean, George and Adams are better. I think it's going to be a good fit for this team. It's going to – when Westbrook sits, the style isn't going to change that much. Schroeder is a very similar player to Westbrook in that he can't shoot from three, but he can get to the rim. He's very good in the pick and roll, and he's a good playmaker. So I like the fit with Schroeder. I don't know how Westbrook and Schroeder are going to work together because neither can shoot and neither wants to move off the ball. But when Westbrook sits, I don't suspect you're going to see that drop off that we've seen in previous years when Westbrook is on the bench.
Yeah, I'm also I'm really high on this move. This is their Reggie Jackson replacement. Their sixth man. I don't know how much time him and Westbrook will play together on the floor. I really feel like this is just the best chance for Westbrook to get some kind of rest, which he really hasn't been able to get the last couple of years. And I think in the second unit where they're probably going to want to kind of push the tempo more, as you mentioned, he's really good in the pick and roll. I'm more worried about his off the court issues. You know, I think he has a domestic violence case or whatever going on. That's the kind of stuff I'm more concerned about. But I think on the floor, he'll be pretty good.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be one of the more intriguing situations to keep an eye on this season. Like Jeremy said, when Westbrook goes to the bench, you have somebody you can bring in and kind of run the show in a similar way. But how does he fit with Westbrook? Can they play together? How's Schroeder's jump shot going to look? I think that's obviously something to keep an eye on. But Luwu Kabarot and Nader, what do you think of these two? Are they going to get playing time? Do you expect to see them in the floor?
I think one more quick point on Schroeder. you know, last season wasn't good for him. But if you go back to two seasons ago when Atlanta was a decent team, when they still had Paul Millsap and they made the playoffs, he was good as kind of that second and third guy that season. And that's what he'll be expected to be in OKC. Like, he's not better than Westbrook. He's not better than George. He's probably not even better than Adams. But if we're talking just kind of wings and guards, he's that third guy. And I mean, we saw him in Atlanta in that playoff series against the Wizards. Like, he was going toe to toe with John Wall. He did shoot really well during that season and into the playoffs. It was two seasons ago. Can that carry over after everything that went wrong last season? We'll see. But I think as the sort of third option on the team, I think that's where people kind of get it confused, is last season he was the first option. And if your best player is Dennis Schroeder, your team's obviously not very good. If your third best player is Dennis Schroeder, then, I mean, your team could probably thrive with that. And I think that's the biggest thing for Schroeder this season, is there's a lot less pressure on him than there was in Atlanta. As far as TLC and Nader go, I don't suspect they're going to get a ton of time. TLC might be part of this wing rotation that, after Abrines, it's kind of a mess. And the same thing with Nader. I listened to Media Day, and a lot of the Media Day guys or a lot of the guys on the team were talking about him on Media Day, how he kind of fits. I didn't really see that in Boston last year. And TLC's another guy. These are just guys that they're 3-and-D guys without the three. And if they get a shot, if they figure out their shot, then, you know, they can turn into something. But the Thunder have this habit of just drafting 3-and-D guys who can't shoot, and or trading for or signing just these 3-and-D guys who don't provide the three. And we'll see if TLC or Nader can actually be one of those guys.
Yeah. TLC, I think, showed some flashes with Philly last year, but obviously, like you said, it's developing that jump shot. And Nader, we really don't know much, because it felt like most of the time he was playing with Boston was garbage time or just when somebody was injured. Any thoughts on those two, Corey?
Nah, I don't think they're throw-ins.
Free agent signing-wise, obviously, Nerlens Noel was the big signing, 1 year veteran minimum. What are your thoughts on what he can bring? Do you expect him to kind of bounce back in OKC?
Yeah, Noel is sort of similar to Schroeder in that the expectations were kind of high, and then it didn't really work out in Dallas. And, you know, who knows what it was in Dallas, whether it was an attitude issue, whether it was a contract issue, a coaching issue, a system issue. You know, we're not super privy to that, and we'll never know the real story. The talent is obviously there. You watch him in spurts last year. He's very good in the pick and roll, obviously an elite rim protector, a good rim runner. He's similar into what Steven Adams can do, in that he does a lot of the dirty work, if he's willing to do that dirty work. You know, was he always willing to do that in Dallas? I don't think he was. Is he going to be willing to do that in OKC? I would hope with the infrastructure that they have that he'll be more open to doing that. And, I mean, this is a complete prove-yourself deal for Noel. Like, if he's not going to figure it out this year, chances are he's just never going to figure it out. He left a lot of money on the table in Dallas. It didn't go his way. He had to really just sign a nothing contract with any team to try to prove himself. He's going to a team that has a history of developing bigs like him, and he's going to get playing time behind Steven Adams. So if he doesn't figure it out this year, he's probably a lost cause. I have hopes that him and Schroeder can develop a good pick and roll chemistry, and he'll be an excellent rim protector and rim runner.
Yeah, Noel just needs to get into the right fit. Obviously, in Dallas, there was the issue with him and Carlisle. I'm really high on him. I think he has a lot of potential, and this is also going to be like the first real winning environment he's going to be in. You know, he's bouncing around from the Sixers to the Mavericks, who really weren't competing for anything. He's actually around guys who, you know, as Paul George said recently, you know, they're contending in their eyes. So maybe like you said, the difference in infrastructure, being around guys who are now trying to win, I think it might be a better environment for him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what Noel can do. And kind of like what Jeremy said, if he doesn't do it here, then he's probably not going to do it anywhere. And I think this kind of adds the idea that they're really going to try to be a strong defensive team. Obviously, Noel has that defensive potential and rim running for oops and whatnot. I'll be interested to see how he kind of develops that and gives them somebody else they can kind of play on the floor. But looking departure-wise, obviously, we'll start with Carmelo. Obviously, he was traded away, then bought out. What are your thoughts on Carmelo leaving? How much is this going to benefit the team, or are they going to miss him in some ways?
I think it's addition by subtraction. The one thing good I will say about Carmelo is that it never became a distraction. At least it didn't seem like it in the locker room. Obviously, there was the who me meme, which is still used today. So a lot of fans online had fun with that. But in the locker room, these guys seemed like they were together. They seemed like they were always willing to try to sacrifice and figure it out. Like, Carmelo is right. He did sacrifice a lot. I still got frustrated with how many touches he was getting in the post. And, I mean, he sacrificed a lot and still didn't play the role that he needed to play, or at least he wasn't effective in the role they asked him to play. But he seemed like a good teammate and a good locker room guy. But on the floor, he wasn't hitting shots, and he was just taking away, again, that Utah game five. You just saw kind of what this team can do when you just sort of let Westbrook and George just go off, and you don't have to worry about placating a third guy. And that's the other thing, is they had to placate Carmelo. He had to get his touches. He had to get his shots. That's just who he is. Now, when they're playing beside somebody like Abrines or Robertson, those guys don't need shots. I'd like to see Alex Abrines get more shots. But you're not going to feel bad if Alex Abrines goes five possessions without a shot. Whereas Carmelo, if he goes five possessions without a shot, then it's like you have to force the ball to him almost. So with Carmelo being gone, it's a lot easier, especially with the system that the Thunder kind of run. Golden State can make it work with as many stars because their system is in place and everybody buys in and everything. The Thunder, they've always been a two-star team, and they've built around that. And now they're kind of – they're back to that the system this season without Carmelo.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't work. I would say they missed Melo if it was better. It just didn't work, and he's another year older. I bought in on Hoodie Melo, and I'm not buying any more stock. I'm selling. I just think he's on the decline. Realistically, if he was a sixth man last year for the Thunder, it might have been different. It seems like he's more embraced for that role this upcoming season, but it just didn't work last year. And like you said, if Melo doesn't get a shot in like three possessions, if that ball touches his hands on that fourth possession, it's not being passed again. He's taking that shot. That's his. It's my turn.
Six jab steps and three pumps.
Yeah. And then we get a clanker out the front of the rim.
One thing about Melo is he did play, and this is why I never understood why he didn't just accept a bench role. I mean, I get it from an ego standpoint, but early in the season, he would be on the second unit. He was next to like Felton, Abrines, Patterson, and Grant. Like, he was running the second unit, and he was just allowed to be essentially New York Melo because, you know, who else is going to take that shot? So he would work out of the post and, yeah, do his jab stepping and his spinning and everything. And it worked actually really well because he was lined up against opposing second units, and he could still, for the most part, get his buckets against those guys. And then I don't know what it was, if Melo was like, yeah, I didn't come here to play next to Raymond Felton and Alex Abrines, or what it might have been, or if Billy Donovan is just weird and it's like, we're losing games, because they were losing games early in the season. And he just never went back to sort of, like, that's how Melo can be effective, honestly. You play him against bench guys, he can still get buckets. But you play him against starters, and it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. We'll kind of see what happens in Houston this year. It looks like Corey mentioned he'll be a little bit more open to the bench role. But talking about some of the other departments, Dakari Johnson, Kyle Singler, Nick Collison, Josh Eustace, Corey Brewer, any of these guys you wish they kept? And what are they going to lose with not re-signing these guys? And obviously in Collison's case, he retired.
They're going to lose really good hair game with Collison and Singler gone. Those two had top-notch hair game. Nothing really with those guys. I mean, Collison's still going to be around. If he hasn't accepted a front office role, he's more or less in the front office at this point. So I suspect he'll be kind of a lot like Tim Duncan is in San Antonio, where he's at practice every other week. The rest of the guys, I liked Brewer. I thought Brewer was a good veteran fit that they really needed after the Robertson injury. But, you know, Robertson's coming back. They have younger guys. And they could still get Brewer sometime down the line. I don't think he signed on with any other team. Singler was pretty much out. Hustis, he was another 3-and-D guy that never got the three part of it down. And, yeah, these guys are kind of minimal losses.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Collison, obviously, if he's around the team, then you're not losing much. He was just a great locker room guy. Obviously, he's been there forever. And then Corey Brewer, I think they missed Corey Brewer slightly. I'm a big Corey Brewer guy because I'm a Gators fan. But because he played a good role for them. You know, he plays nagging deep. He's not a great defender, but he's a nagger. He runs very good, cuts to the basket. He's always active. So I think you might miss him slightly. But like you said, there's younger guys to bring up, and Roberson's obviously healthy now.
Talking about starters for opening night, who you got?
So this will go back to your point on Patrick Patterson, because I'm glad you guys brought him up, and I'm glad I'm not the only one that was really high on him heading into last season. Obviously, if healthy, Robertson's supposed to not be back until around December, he said, and even he said he probably won't be back to his elite defensive self around Christmas. But the healthy starters is Westbrook, Robertson, George, Adams. And Patterson and Grant is the battle here. And I love Patrick Patterson on the starting lineup. I loved him coming into last season before the Carmelo trade kind of threw that off. I think he is a very good stretch four guy. And one thing they really got away from last season, because Carmelo Anthony did not come to OKC to set hard screens, but the pick and pop game with Westbrook was just, it wasn't there. There was no one to pick and pop with him. And Patrick Patterson, I feel like, was supposed to be that guy. We just rarely saw it last season because they did not play enough minutes together. I think they played less than 500 minutes together, talking about Westbrook and Patterson. And this starting lineup that I'm projecting only played like a handful of minutes together the entire season. Like, this lineup was never on the floor, which was weird to me because it seemed like this was the starting lineup prior to the Melo trade. But with Patterson, I think he's the starter over Grant because he is a better shooter. He is still a good defender. And they got to get back to the pick and pop game because that was a bread and butter of Westbrook and Ibaka and then Westbrook and Cantor. And hopefully it'll be that way with Westbrook and Patterson.
With Roberson out on opening night, who do you think is going to start in his place?
This is a weird one because ideally, you would say Alex Abrines, and you wouldn't give it a second thought. But Billy Donovan is super strange in that he likes the cohesion with the second unit, and he likes kind of that substitution pattern. So, like, say if Westbrook isn't, you know, he has the knee issue, and he's kind of questionable right now for opening night. If he doesn't play, you would say, like, oh, yeah, Dennis Schroeder's your starting point guard 100%. But Billy Donovan likes to kind of keep that bench rotation the same to where he might start Raymond Felton just to keep Schroeder kind of with the bench unit. And I feel like the same thing might happen with Abrines to where he should be the starter. But, you know, when Robertson got hurt last year, it was Terrence Ferguson who was the starter for long stretches before they finally signed Corey Brewer. And that's what could happen this year is they might just start Ferguson or TLC or maybe even Diallo just because they want to keep Abrines with the bench unit.
I could see it. I mean, it definitely, I've seen Donovan do some strange things before. Corey, what are your thoughts on starting lineup on opening night?
I mean, I think I agree because he has done that. I mean, that's why I wondered last season why Ferguson was starting over Abrines. I don't follow the team deeply, so I wasn't sure why that was the case, and that makes sense. If Billy Donovan wants to keep rotations the same and have guys, you know, playing comfortably with the same guys every night, then I think that makes sense. For me, it'd be the same starting five, though.
Yeah, I think Patterson makes the most sense, but I wouldn't be surprised if Grant started over him for some reason if Patterson still doesn't look right. Any other position battles other than shooting guard and power forward?
No, not really. I mean, everything else is pretty much locked in. I mean, really, shooting guard and small forward is behind Robertson, Abrines, and George. It's really up in the air. Like Ferguson, TLC, Diallo, maybe they sign somebody, but anybody could grasp sort of that fourth spot there. Even Felton, I have a feeling Felton's going to play a lot at shooting guard if they want to give him minutes. So that's really a hodgepodge there. And then, yeah, Grant and Patterson, they're both going to get minutes. It's just a matter of who plays more with the starters.
Breakout starter, who you got?
If Patterson starts, then it's him. I was super high on him coming into last year. And then whether it was the knee issue, whether it was Carmelo sending him to the bench, it never worked out. I mean, nobody else, everyone knows Westbrook. Everyone knows George. Everyone kind of knows what Adams brings and what Robertson brings. So Patterson's kind of almost the default guy here, unless Robertson turns into a competent three-point shooter, or Steven Adams turns into a mid-range killer all of a sudden.
All right, so I'm going crazy. I'm saying Paul George is the breakout star.
I had a feeling you were going to go with that.
he had a slight down year last year. It's another year playing with Westbrook. He's going to get more touch now that Melo's gone. I actually think Paul George has a chance to really be kind of the vocal point of the offense as the beta, not the leader. He's not really a leader. He kind of just likes being the other guy, and Westbrook clearly is that guy. I just think Paul George will have the offense running through him more. I'm expecting that to average between 25 and 26 points per game. Just bump it up a little bit better. Obviously, he's a great defender. I'm saying Paul George. I don't know. I got a feeling.
Yeah, I like the Paul George pick too. I think he could definitely improve it last year and then feel more comfortable, and then more chemistry with Westbrook, Melo not being there. But I'm going to go with Jeremy. I think whoever starts a power forward, is it Patterson, is it Grant? I think both those guys have the opportunity to really step up this year. Now, bench player, who's breaking out?
I got to go with my man, Alex Abrines. I've loved him ever since he came into the league a couple years ago. I wish he would just get more opportunities. He's, again, Billy Donovan with his rotations is very weird, where Abrines will play great one night and then he'll have a bad game and then he just won't play for two or three games. People want to knock Abrines for his defense. Throughout last season, he made great strides as a defender. I thought he actually did the best job of anybody on Donovan Mitchell in the playoffs. And, I mean, nobody really slowed down Donovan Mitchell. But Abrines played him about as well as you could ask a guy like Alex Abrines to play a superstar like Donovan Mitchell. He's the best shooter on the team. This is a team with not very good shooting outside of really Paul George. And then you got guys who kind of hover around that 33-35% mark, but could easily drop down into the 20s. Abrines is a proven shooter, and I think he's going to have a strong season coming off the bench and with a bigger role, especially with so much kind of behind him. There's just not a lot there.
I'm going with Nerlens Noel. I think he's got a huge opportunity here to finally earn some good rotational minutes in the NBA. And if he doesn't, like we kind of mentioned earlier, this could be his last stop. I like him and Dennis Schroeder in the pick and roll off the bench. I like him as a rim runner. As long as he's, the rumor came out that he was lazy, that he just didn't work hard. So if he's got the motor going and he's trying, and like I said earlier, if he's playing around these guys who are trying to win, that rubs off on him. I think it's got to be Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, same thing over here in Nerlens Noel. And I think having somebody like a Westbrook and a Steven Adams from a leadership perspective would kind of get after him a little bit and make him kind of step his game up. And he can kind of provide, like you said, Corey, that pick and roll partner for Dennis Schroeder. And then also, I love his defensive versatility when he's healthy and playing hard. But looking at the season, what's best case scenario for OKC?
Best case scenario would be the 2 seed, because things go horribly wrong in Houston with Carmelo Anthony. And then the Western Conference Finals against Golden State, because no one's messing with them again this year, unfortunately. So yeah, best case scenario would be that 2 seed, and then the Western Conference Finals.
How many wins you thinking in best case?
Over 50. So we'll go 55.
What do you got, Corey?
My best case scenario is 55 wins, and there are 2 or a 3 seed in the West.
Yeah, I got 54 wins. You know, like you guys said, two or three seed if something were to go wrong in Houston. I still like Houston to probably get that two seed, but I think OKC is going to play some really, really, really good defense. And then Western Conference Final, depending on how, you know, the seedings match up and whatnot. But on a negative note, worst case scenario.
Missing the playoffs. This team can go sour quickly. A lot of it would have to do with injuries. If Westbrook is more injured than let on with his knee, or if something just goes wrong and he does get injured. I mean, the West is just such a bloodbath this year. That one injury to a guy like Westbrook or George, and I mean, that could be the difference, because you're looking at a really good team out West who's going to miss the playoffs. If they stay healthy all year, I feel like the worst case scenario is probably like a six seed or so. I'm high on the team this year, and I'll kind of get into more on that on the actual prediction. But yeah, if they're healthy, then the worst case is just probably a six seed, because it's OKC and fans have kind of expect things to go weird and wrong in the regular season, even if everyone stays healthy. But an injury to Westbrook or George, and the team probably misses the playoffs.
Yeah, barring injury, worst case scenario for me is probably like 46 and 36, and then they fall anywhere between, you know, the sixth seed in the West and the 10th seed and missing the playoffs. Now, obviously, the Western Conference is going to be tight, and this team, you know, if they replicate, if they don't take their game to another level, and they play like they did last year, and it just doesn't work, somebody gets hurt, this team is in trouble.
Yeah, without an injury, you know, injury-wise, I think if Westbrook were to go down longer, it would be, you know, not make the playoffs. But if everyone's healthy, I think 46 or 47 wins, probably squeezing into the playoffs as one of the lower seeds and probably being a headache whoever they play for the first round. But actual prediction for you guys.
So this is why I'm sort of high on the team, and Paul George alluded to it in on Media Day. They're bringing back the core. This is the first season under Donovan where he has the same core guys, being Westbrook, George, and Adams. You know, first season, he's the first year head coach. That team was obviously very talented, and they were the third seed, and they should have been in the finals, but Kevin Durant forgot how to shoot. You know, the season after that, Durant leaves, it's Westbrook and kind of a hodgepodge of guys. And last season, it's George and Melo trying to fit everybody in. This season, you're getting that core back for the first time. There's finally some consistency in this team. That's obviously huge in the NBA, having, you know, from year to year, you look at a team like Toronto, and from year to year, they never really made big improvements to the roster, but they kept bringing back the core, and they just kept getting better in the regular season. Obviously, they kept running into LeBron in the playoffs, but during the regular season, they were always excellent. And a lot of it had to do with because they just had the same guys, they had the same system, they developed that chemistry over the years. And that's sort of where OKC is at. You look at a lot of teams, and so my actual prediction is the third seed. I'll give Houston the benefit of the doubt, but they did make some big changes with Carmelo, losing some glue guys there. I don't know if they get Jimmy Butler. If they do, that raises their ceiling, but that's still a guy you have to fit into your lineup. And then other teams, you know, the Lakers are going to be good because of LeBron, but that's a completely new team. And we've seen kind of LeBron teams really struggle during the regular season with their big changes. And everything. Utah is going to be good because they're bringing back kind of the same guy, but it felt like best case scenario for them last year, especially with their end of season schedule, which was almost a cakewalk. Portland, I feel like they showed who they truly were in the playoffs. I don't know what's going on in Minnesota. I don't think anybody knows what's going on in
That should
Minnesota.
be fun to see how that unravels.
New Orleans is, you know, that's still a good team with Anthony Davis, but even they made some pretty big changes with Julius Randle, and losing Rajon Rondo might be a bigger loss than anticipated. And then San Antonio, I mean, they've got DeMar DeRozan, which is an upgrade over no Kawhi Leonard, but that's still a weird team with a lot of mid-range shooting that you're sort of living and dying by. So I think the consistency in Oklahoma City is going to lead to a big year. And I think the actual, my actual prediction is the third seed. And I will say second round just because I am a pessimist and I never think my team's going to do all that well.
So the Vegas over under for OKC is 50 and a half wins. I'm going over. I'm going with 52 wins. I think they do get a three seed as well. I think the defense is going to be the big reason for this team's success next year. They're going to be really tough on that side of the court. And of course, Paul George and Westbrook, I think they're going to be healthy. They're going to be that two-man show, as you mentioned earlier, Jeremy. This OKC team is used to having, you know, two stars, Kevin Durant, Westbrook, you know, the back and forth, and they kind of have that now. So I'm going 52 and a three seed.
I really like that over and under. I think that's a good actual spot from the odds. But I'm going to go with 51 wins, just slightly over. And like you guys said, somewhere between a 3 and 5 seed. I think, like I've mentioned on previous shows, the West is going to be so close, even at towards the top, that I think seeding on one game could really change everything. But like you said, Corey, you know, back to the two stars, back to the defense. I think they'll be in really good shape and probably a second round knockout. Do you think there's a scenario where they end up in the Western Conference Finals, guys?
I do. Because, as I just said, the consistency, the two stars, the West is very, very tough. But you've got Paul George, you've got Russell Westbrook. As you guys have said, the defense, this team can really cut its teeth. Like, you look at 1 through 5 and then coming off the bench even with Noel, maybe with Schroeder if he wants to play defense. But I guess he's used to having – a point guard that sometimes plays defense and sometimes doesn't. But this team can really switch everything and really clamp people down defensively. I mean, you're not going to find, I don't know if they're outside of maybe Boston, a team that can really defend the Warriors 1 through 5. And the West is such, it's honestly tough to figure out the West is this year because there are so many. You got the Warriors at the top, but Houston with Carmelo Anthony, with kind of the changes they made, it's a mystery of how that's going to work out. I kind of just ran through all the different teams, but you see sort of the flaws in all of those teams. And OKC has their flaws as well. There's definitely not enough perimeter shooting on this team, and that probably hurts them in the end. But I don't think it's a stretch to say really any team 2 through 8 in the West could potentially make the Western Conference Finals. I feel like those teams are really grouped together. And if everything goes right in a playoff series for them, they could end up against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals.
It's true. And I think one injury, and I've mentioned this before too, is one injury or just one wrong matchup and, you know, you get knocked out. What would you say was some of the more favorable teams that can match up in the playoffs if you had to have your picks, you know, first and second round?
Minnesota.
Well, let's assume Minnesota doesn't make the playoffs because I don't think they will if they move Jimmy Butler. But
I really like San Antonio. I wanted San Antonio in the first round last year. OKC just always seems to match up well with San Antonio because the athleticism of Westbrook seems to just give them trouble. And maybe now with Dejounte Murray instead of Tony Parker. I mean, Murray is a much better defender now than Tony Parker is in this day and age. But Westbrook always seems to give them trouble. No Kawhi Leonard now. They're not going to have much of an answer for Paul George. I mean, San Antonio, you're banking on DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge just – hitting a lot of mid-range shots, and I'll take my chances with that. Then even like Denver, because I don't know what their defense is going to be. Like that it could be a shootout, and that might not do well with OKC, but I do think that when it comes down to it, I can trust the Thunder's defense to really hunker down and get stops against Denver, and I don't know if Denver can really do that and get stops against Westbrook and Adams pick and rolls or Westbrook and George.
Yeah, Mike, that'd be a really fun matchup, though. It'd be like the opposites, you know, defense versus offense. But what you got, Corey?
I think the Blazers are a favorable matchup for the Thunder.
No.
You don't think so? Why not?
Oh, the Thunder have not beaten and this is probably just me. In a playoff series, I would like the Thunder. But realistically, the Thunder have not beaten the Blazers since the Blazers traded for Nurkic.
Interesting.
That's a game I dread every single time because I don't know what it is, but Nurkic is like Adams' kryptonite. CJ McCollum never misses. Like the Blazers didn't have Lillard in a game last year, and Shabazz Napier goes off. CJ McCollum hit everything, and Nurkic just completely kills Adams for some reason. So yeah, in a playoff series, I would probably say I would favor the Thunder, but that is just an interesting note, is that since the Nurkic trade, the Thunder have not beaten the Blazers.
All right, that's surprising. I still think the 7-game series, the Thunder win probably in 5. I don't know. I don't think that pairing of McCollum and Lillard works in the playoffs in a 7-game series. I think it works on a nightly basis in the NBA regular season, but I just don't see it working in the playoffs. And then I think the Nuggets too. If you could limit their offense enough, they don't play any defense. That's the kind of nights where Westbrook and Paul George can drop, 35 plus a piece and probably lead the Thunder.
Yeah, I think the Blazers also left like a sour taste in everybody's mouth from last season, the way it ended and whatnot. So we'll kind of see how they bounce back from that. But on to the most important question of the show. What emoji represents the Thunder for you?
The cursing emoji. Because, I feel like I curse this team every single night, whether it's – and a lot of it begins and ends with Westbrook and – you just never know what you're going to get with this guy, whether I'm cursing in after a good play or cursing after a bad play. I love Russell Westbrook to death. He's the most frustrating player to watch, though.
For me, it's the fingers crossed emoji. I'm hoping this plays out how I'm envisioning it. I hope Paul George has a good year, Westbrook. I think this team struggles. Billy Donovan may be on the hot seat, and I'm a big Billy Donovan fan.
For me, I'm going to go with the lock emoji. Like we mentioned, I think this team's going to be great defensively. Obviously, they've been in the past, but I think they could even take it to another level. So that's it for me. But league pass rating-wise, 1 through 10, where are they at?
I went with an 8. I'm never sure how to judge my own team on this. Like, they have Russell Westbrook. I feel like he's must-see TV almost every night because, I mean, maybe the triple-double has become – sort of watered down, and it's like, okay, he got another triple-double, big deal. But this guy just does amazing things on the basketball court every single night. Paul George is a treat to watch. And then they've got fun guys like a Steven Adams or Jeremy Grant. And with Schroeder in the mix this year, it's definitely a good mix of guys that you would want to tune in and kind of see. But I went with an 8 because I watched them on a nightly basis. So I don't know how other fans around the league sort of judge the team.
Well, I'm pretty high. I'm going with a 9.
Ooh.
I think between Westbrook and Paul George, anytime you have two stars that like each other, and I think that with Melo going out, I think this team is – I really do think they're going to take a step forward. I think those two guys are going to look really good next to each other, not having to worry about getting Melo his touches. I think it's going to make the offense a lot more fun to watch, more flowing, and I like the role players that they step up.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 8.5. I think defensively they're going to be good. And then, like you guys mentioned, Westbrook and Paul George. But I think they'll have their nights where they're kind of just grinding out, playing good defense, lack of perimeter shooting. And it's not going to be super entertaining. But other nights you'll see Westbrook drop 40. Same thing with Paul George and whatnot. But what TV shows would you watch over the Thunder? Obviously, a hypothetical gun to your head. The Thunder are your team, Jeremy. But if you had to pick maybe your favorite TV show, what would it be?
I would honestly watch them over any TV show. But as far as like TV shows that are on nowadays to where I'd be like, all right, which one am I going to choose? The Thunder game or a TV show that I really like? I like The Goldbergs on ABC. I don't know if you guys watched that.
I saw that. Yeah, my girlfriend watches that a good amount.
It's a fun show. It doesn't take itself too serious. It's got some nostalgia in it and whatnot. So I would watch it over The Goldbergs, I guess.
For me, I'm going with Narcos.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, Narcos is one of my favorite shows. I wish there was more of it, but through 3 seasons, really entertaining. Pablo Escobar and all that.
Damn, I've like really forgot about that show in terms of doing the previous previews, and I would have included.
I can tell you sounded really excited when I said it.
Yeah, well, I actually would have been really excited like 5 shows ago when I really needed something more in that range. But for this one, I'm still struggling trying to find shows right now. So like, I guess I'm gonna get creative and I'm gonna go with a Packers football game. Obviously, Green Bay is my favorite team, so that way I would watch the Packers over OKC. Any last thoughts you guys want to get in on the Thunder?
I want to ask Corey a question because he mentioned he was a Florida guy. What are your thoughts on Billy Donovan?
Long sigh.
I I just don't think the players have trusted him yet. And he also hasn't had a set core. As you mentioned, this is the first year he's got guys coming back for the second year. That first year was really tough to gauge with Oladipo and Westbrook. The year before when it was just Westbrook pretty much. They had Westbrook and Durant, and then they had Westbrook and Oladipo. I just don't think they've had a set core to get his system in mind, but I don't know if he's strong enough to kind of tell Westbrook what to do at times. I feel like Westbrook is kind of overshadowing Donovan in a bit just because of who he is. I mean, I could be way off, but I just don't think he's had full support yet by his players.
Yeah, you
know, I get the same vibe. Sorry to cut you off, Jeremy. That, like, Donovan hasn't really had full control of the team because at times it looks like he's wanted them to do other things and maybe they're just, you know, going back to what they're used to or what they want to do. And I think he really needs to enforce that. And I think having a core obviously will benefit him, but I think at some points he just needs to be a little bit more stern.
Yeah, I feel like this is the season that we're going to see a true representation of Billy Donovan because Thunder. That core is kind of back. And for Thunder fans, a lot of it does come down to Westbrook. Like, all right, he says all the right things to the media, but when you watch him play, it's like, is that really the play they drew up for you, like, in this moment? Did you really follow coach's orders there and whatnot? So I'm with you guys. It's a weird thing with Billy Donovan. I do think sometimes his rotations have been sort of weird and guys have not played when they should have or guys will close when they shouldn't. But this is a season where you kind of know what you're getting as far as with the Thunder goes and with their core. No real, you know, everyone's saying the right things in training camp right now. There is no who me meme coming out where it with guys not accepting a bench role. There's no cloud over this team right now. I mean, even last year, all right, you bring in Carmelo Anthony, but there was still a cloud of, is it 1 year of Paul George? You know, the core guys are locked up. I feel like this is Donovan's year to really prove himself. Cause I think he can. I mean, we saw that first year. I mean, he had immense talent with Westbrook and Kevin Durant and even Adams and Ibaka. I mean, but he outcoached Greg Popovich in that series, and he was on his way to outcoaching Steve Kerr if things don't happen.
Klay Thompson doesn't catch fire.
Klay Thompson doesn't catch fire. I don't like talking about that.
Don't worry, I'm a Pacers fan. He drops 60 on 11 dribbles.
Kevin Durant doesn't forget how to shoot, all this other stuff.
That was really not to bring it back up, but that was so disappointing. And I think a lot of people wanted OKC to win just because everyone was like, oh, Golden State, like, blah, blah, blah. They were still, like, the villain at that point. And, like, now how things, you know, went after that, they lose, and then KD goes to Golden State. It was just like,
And what happens if they win?
Right? If the Thunder win that series, I think they win the title because that Cleveland team was good, but – and that Cleveland team was down 3-1 as well, and they come back, thanks in large part to, you know, Draymond Green kind of self-imploding and LeBron James just being LeBron James. But
they kind of poked the bear. They were just talking a little bit too much shit to LeBron in that series.
Yeah, the Thunder, they were a little bit more of a humble team at that time. I think the Thunder win the title. Durant obviously stays at that point, and then you're looking at at least one title, maybe two. Like, you're looking at the Warriors aren't the Warriors. They're not signing DeMarcus Cousins for $5 million this offseason. That's a tough memory. But
it's a negative note to end the show.
When it comes to Donovan, let me pull it back to sort of this season and more positivity. When it comes to Donovan, I do think this is a big season for him because I agree with you guys. Sometimes it doesn't look like my dude David Rammel had a good piece right after the Thunder lost to the Magic, and the Magic were on like an 8-game losing streak or something at the time. And there's that photo of Westbrook sitting on the bench, like contemplating his life and looking like he just wants to be anywhere else in the world. And Rammel talked to Donovan afterwards, and Donovan said, in not so many words, like, these guys are not buying in to what I'm trying to sell them. And after that, they sort of bought in a little bit more. But it's always been sort of a thing with Westbrook is how much is he buying into this system? And I would hope that he's going to buy into things this year with a core together. He knows he can trust these guys. He knows he can trust Adams. He loves Adams. He knows he can trust George. George isn't going anywhere. Abrines is still there. He loves Robertson. Like, he really does love his teammates. He's just got to start to trust them more and start to buy in. And we'll see if it happens. I'm hopeful for Billy Donovan because I do like him. And I do think he's a good coach that's kind of gotten a bad rap with everything that's happened in OKC.
Any final thoughts from you, Corey?
No, I think that wraps it up.
Jeremy, thank you for hopping on. It was our pleasure. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
Oh, I appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at JeremyLamberts88. Going to be writing, covering the Thunder for the Basketball Index this season. Really looking forward to that. And then if you play daily fantasy sports, you can go over to fansided.com/NBA, and I will be there every single day with value and salary picks for your daily fantasy basketball needs. So it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, definitely check that out because doing daily fantasy stuff is a super hard grind. So support his work. Corey, always a pleasure talking hoops with you. You can find the show and all the previews on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.